Judiciary Committee meeting to order. It's 1:35. We have Senator Machicki, Senator Costello, Senator Coghill chairing today. The others up in Anchorage at the United States Army listening session and talking why Alaska is a good place to have military and why Anchorage is a good community to support that. So we appreciate that very much. Today, we have three confirmation appointments, and then we have Senate Bill 21, Affirmative Defense to Prostitution, that we'll have the senator come up here, and Senator Gardner will present it. We have confirmation hearings today, and we have one in the meeting, and before we start by inviting anybody up, it's been my attitude that anybody that will want to help their community under these boards and commissions, they have my deepest respect. We've already had a couple of board nominees back out because it's a public process that can have its drawbacks, and so they have my deepest respect. We get to be thrown into it through a campaign which brings a whole different view of the world than those who come in just to serve and then find themselves in this public view. So my deepest appreciation. Today the confirmation appointees are going to be on the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, the State Commission on Human Rights. And we have George Brown, Dr. Brown here, who has agreed to be appointed to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. I can tell you I've seen their work firsthand, and I have a great appreciation. They get to see some of the toughest stuff that that a commission can dish up. So with that, Dr. Brown's right here present with us, and I've seen him in this Judiciary Committee many, many times, and I appreciate he's been a very vocal advocate for Alaskans. So Dr. Brown, if you wouldn't mind coming up and taking the seat, introduce yourself. And after you introduce yourself, you know, we have a pretty good resume, but for those listening in, just give a short, brief history of yourself and why you wouldn't mind serving on this board, and appreciate you doing that.
Thank you, Senator, and your fellow senators. I'm George Brown. I'm now a retired pediatrician. I live in Douglas. I've worked in Alaska since 1965. First came here with the Public Health Service and worked for 8 or 10 years with them in some rural places. And then after my residency in pediatrics, I came back and worked within the State Health Department with the Child Study Center, where I began to first really get into the problems of children who have developmental delays and significant difficulties because of both physical health problems, some genetic problems, but mostly environmental problems. And my wife went and did her residency in OBGYN, and we came back to Palmer in 1979 and worked there for 10 years with a nonprofit corporation. Quite busy, but we consider that our golden age. We really enjoyed that. We were still young and could get up in the middle of the night and do the things that doctors do, and made many, many friends and came to really feel like we were a part of Alaska. Governor Parnell actually appointed me to finish the term of the physician on the board, so I've already been engaged. I've been to four of the meetings, but I'm very honored to be appointed by Governor Walker, and I feel very much like I'm paying back to the state of Alaska for many benefits that I've reaped for many years by so many wonderful Native Alaskans and European American Alaskans, and I'm more than happy to serve and would be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Doctor, and we really appreciate you being here in person, and I know that others could not be, but thank you for showing up. Here's their questions.
Comment.
Yeah. And, Senator Costello.
Thank you, through the chair. Dr. Brown, your reputation precedes you. When I first came to Juneau after college, I was pregnant with my first son and talking to friends around town about who would be a good doctor, and your name came up in particular because you made home visits. And I remember this one friend of mine, I said, are you kidding? Dr. Brown makes home visits to your home, because behind me were about 100 stairs up to her house. And I just want to say that you have a reputation for being the old-fashioned type of doctor who will actually listen and cares enough to visit people in their homes. And so I want to say you have my complete endorsement. No problems here.
Thank you very much.
Sounds like you might not get any problem out of this committee so far. Senator Machicki, anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Brown, just for the public's knowledge and education, can you tell us why it's so important that there is a physician seat on the Violent Crimes Compensation Board?
Well, the statute allows for or sets up for a public member, a lawyer, and a medical doctor. And since, you know, I've been working more recently in trying to integrate or trying to get my colleagues in the practice of medicine to integrate what I call behavioral health. Most people call it mental health, and that always raises all kinds of, fears and concerns. But to integrate behavioral health and physical health, because, you know, we really cannot separate the mind and the body. And so having someone on the board who can, and recently a good example was going through some very complicated medical records to try to come to a really fair decision about what was best for these victims. And that's what our focus is, and certainly health has to be involved. We also have to be good stewards of limited resources, because there are times when some people probably are asking for more than they really, by the statutes and by the resources, can reasonably be awarded. And so we have to really look at it in great detail. So having those three members from the different aspects allows that kind of, valid assessment and more reliable decision making.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you. Have you had a chance to attend any of the board meetings at all since being nominated?
Yeah, my first, actually, I got to go up to Barrow because Godfrey Jeffrey, the chairman, and Kate Hudson, the administrative director, had decided, I guess a year or so ago, to go hold the meetings in domestic violence shelters or child advocacy centers in more remote places of the state, so they would get to know more about us. A part of it we have to publicize this commission. There are a lot of people who don't even know that if they are in a bad car crash and they're badly injured, that there are resources available for them. So I got to go to Barrow, then I got to go to Nome, and our last two meetings have been here. Been my teleconference from Juneau, I was here with the other representatives in Anchorage, so I've attended four of them.
And thank you. And that was one of the issues I was going to highlight, was that it's still not known by many victims that there's help out there. And so I appreciate that, the fact that they've held them in these various different locations. So the doctor and I have been on opposite ends of the table on many things, but on this one I think we'll be able to travel well together. So for that I'm grateful. And if there's no other questions, I'll let you go, unless you have any other parting comments that you'd like to make.
Thank you for the opportunity. And, I think the state of Alaska has so many resources and so many hardworking people that they are going to continue to be an obvious asset to our country. But I appreciate the fact that we also see that children are the most important asset we will ever have, and we want to do everything we can to do what's right for them. Yeah. Thank you.
Really appreciate that. Thank you, Doctor. Without any further question, we really appreciate your time. We also have online, and what we'll do is we will I'll probably ask if there's any objection to move them up to the full body for confirmation, although we don't really get to stop them. We just get to say we reviewed them, because the full body gets to be the ones that confirm or not confirm. We can just say that we heard their qualifications and recommend that the body be heard. We have Lester Lunsford up. He's in Anchorage on the Human Rights Commission, Alaska Human Rights Commission. Lester, can you hear us?
I can. And Senator Cargill, thank you very much for allowing me to attend this committee.
Yep. Just put your name on the record and give us the reason why you would enjoy taking on this responsibility.
Yes, sir. My name is Lester Lunsford. If successful again this time, I believe this will be my fourth confirmation process. I've been serving on the Alaska Human Rights Commission for over 12 years now, and I enjoy it very much. I feel like I contribute quite a bit. My background is actually a retired police officer, chief of police. Some of you may know me as a former mayor of Whittier, and I've served, like I said, on the commission for about 12 years now, over 12 years. And it's a very interesting commission, and I believe it's a very vital commission. And I would like, with your blessings, I would like to continue to serve.
Thank you. Is there any questions from the committee to Lester? Lester, with Senator Cargill, first of all, thank you. What are some of the issues that procedurally or practically that we should know about this commission, since you've got so many years under your belt on this one, things that we might be able to encourage our constituents with regards to human rights?
Thank you for asking that question, Senator Cargill. You know, it's like many other processes. Sometimes when a complainant brings in a case to the commission for some type of discrimination, you know, it's reviewed, of course, and determined right away whether or not it's believed to have had some type of discrimination take place. And as a result, there's several long and involved investigations that take place. There's mediation that takes place. Sometimes that mediation works, sometimes it doesn't, which obviously delays the final outcome of a complaint. And as a result, sometimes these cases could take a couple of years to resolve. And you know, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. It's caseload. You know, we only have a few investigators on the Alaska Human Rights Commission, and I wish I could remember the number of complaints we received last year, but it escapes me. I should have known this, but I apologize for that. But it's well into the upper hundreds, and it gets very time-consuming when you investigate this type of a caseload. And so, having said that, there's not a lot that we can do. You know, obviously, employing more investigators would help, but we at the commission understand that there's budgetary constraints, and you know, it's just not possible and nor feasible at this time to increase personnel. And we work with that, and we live with that, and we understand and respect that.
Thank you. And one of the things that the reason I'm asking this question is for those listening in, that there is a human rights commission, that if they feel like their rights have been violated in the workplace, that they have recourse. But you also keep those very confidential until you've completed your investigation, isn't that correct?
That is very correct, sir. Everything is dealt with the most confidential ality and allowed.
Yeah, it, like with so many other areas, an accusation is as good as a guilty in so many areas of our society, but we still want people to feel free to have some place that they can go if they feel like they have been discriminated against in a significant way. So for that, I appreciate, because you get to hear some of the tougher cases. And is there a prioritization process that you deal with, or is it case by case?
It's definitely a case by case, Senator Cargill, and It ranges anywhere from age discrimination to race, sexual orientation, you name it. We get them all.
What is the most common way for people to get in touch with the Human Rights Commission?
Well, we do have a website on the internet, and we also have a number that's listed under the Alaska, under the State of Alaska Human Rights Commission, and I'm sure we're publicized in all the phone books throughout the State of Alaska.
Seems to me that as a past employer, isn't it supposed to be posted in a place of employment as well?
If that was a question for me, I believe you're correct, sir.
Okay. That's a question. I didn't expect you to answer. I was wondering out loud. I figured if you knew, you would probably know as much as anybody. But if I remember correctly, that and the wage hour issue was to be posted, the labor issue. So any other questions? Lester, we appreciate you willing to serve another term, and hopefully some of that backlog will be taken care of along the way. And with that, I'm going to dismiss you unless you have any further comment.
No, sir. Thank you again for this opportunity, and thank you for the committee hearing, and I look forward to the rest of the process, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We have next in line, we have Catherine Dodge, who I'm sorry I didn't see this, but you're out of state at this point. Catherine, are you on with us?
I am, thank you.
Just introduce yourself, tell us where you're at, and why you'd be willing to serve on this commission.
Thank you. So my name is Catherine Dodge, and I'm presently in Washington, D.C., attending a National Association of Counties meeting or conference. I really volunteered to serve on this committee because I think it's important that people who feel that they have been discriminated against in some way have a place to go and make that statement, make that claim in a fair and transparent process for all to explore it.
And have you had a chance to attend any of the meetings to date yet, Catherine?
I have not. I have read the briefing materials, so I've read up on one or two of their meetings and some other information, but I have not had that opportunity yet.
Well, thank you. I can tell you, those listening in, I've had the chance to work personally with Catherine on a variety of different topics, and I think she will do well here. So is there anything that you particularly see in the statutes that either surprise you or you think that process-wise could be done better, or are you still just too new at the stage to see any of those things?
The one thing I would say is I just finished an ombudsman report from early, actually I think 2010, but it refers to a period of time in the late 90s, that might sound like a familiar time, when the state was having fiduciary challenges and they had Leah Sadasher, which is what they call the State Commissioner on Human Rights. What they also said is they also experienced an increased number of complaints because there were layoffs going on in the public sphere. And that sounded kind of like something we might be facing, and it was just an awareness, I think, as Mr. Lansford said, there's not probably much to do about it at this time, but it's something to know might be coming our way.
Well, we'll pay attention to that. Any other questions to Catherine Dodge at this point? Catherine, thanks for listening on the phone, being a part of this, and being, what are we, 4 or 5 hours off from where you're at?
Yep.
So thank you very much. We'll release you at this point, and we will pass your name on to the full body for consideration or confirmation.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure. And I look forward to serving on this important commission.
Yeah, have a pleasant rest of the day.
Thank you, and you.
I think we have more of it than she does at this point. So with that, we have confirmation committee report. And it says, in accordance with the Alaska Statute 3905.080, the Judiciary Committee reviewed the following, recommends the appointments be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. Violent Crimes Compensation Board, Dr. George Brown. It says George Brown Douglas, is that correct? Okay. And State Commission on Human Rights, Catherine Dodge Fairbanks, and State Commission on Human Rights, Lester Lunsford, Anchorage. And what I'm just going to do is have you sign them. I don't think we need a motion. At this point, let's go ahead and take a brief of these. We'll get the senator ready for her introduction while we pass these out. All right, we'll take a brief of these. Reminded by Senator Michicki, passing the this report out of committee on these commission members doesn't show our approval or disapproval of them. It's just that we have reviewed them, find that they're qualified, ask them some questions, and pass them along to the body for consideration. So qualifications are in order, so away we go. With that, what we have now is Senate Bill 21. Senator Gardner is bringing before us. And the expectation today is do the bill overview, get some public testimony. And we have one person who is under time constraints, so I'll let you introduce the bill. And then if you don't mind, I'd like to go ahead and get her testimony, and then we can go back to questions. If you don't, is that all right with
you? That sounds good. Thank you.
So introduce yourself, your staff, and your bill.
Thank you very much. I'm Britta Gardner. I represent Midtown Anchorage here in the Senate, and with me is, Katie Bergman, she's my staff, and she's new. This is her first time presenting a bill, and I just have a couple things to say, and then she'll take it, and I think that she'll have the information that the committee's looking for. So the bill, Senate Bill 21, has a very narrow focus on a large problem of violence and abuse that we have in this state and indeed across our country and even in the world. Specifically, we're talking about sex trafficking and coerced prostitution. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we understand that perpetrators can be male or female, and the victims can also be male or female. But for our purposes today, just to simplify things and in keeping with what's probably the most common experience, we're going to refer to perpetrators as him or her and the victims as she, even though it could be otherwise. So that's a simple thing. And you know, the simplest way to explain this idea is that if a person is arrested for prostitution, she can say, yes, I broke the law, I did it under coercion or force, and here's the evidence I offer you. And that's not a complicated thing, although everything is more complicated when you get into the roots of it. And Katie has some personal experience on the legal side with this issue. So she's going to introduce the bill, and I'll be here for questions, too.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Katie Bruggeman, and I am an aide to Senator Britta Gardner. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity for me to testify on Senate Bill 21, an act relating to a defense to the crime of prostitution for victims of sex trafficking. An identical version of this bill passed unanimously through both the House and Senate last year, but it died in House rules at the end of the 28th legislative session. It received bipartisan support in both bodies. We hope to make further progress this session and pass this important and potentially life-saving legislation. Sex trafficking, like other crimes of exploitation, violence against women, and sex assault, is at epidemic levels in Alaska. Recent statistics reported by the Christian Science Monitor state that on a national level, sex trafficking has increased by 230% since 2008. Here at the state legislature level, we are constantly attempting to identify, analyze, and resolve issues of victimization and harm faced by women, children, and men across the state, and this is one piece of a very large puzzle that requires our attention. With an affirmative defense, the defendant may concede that she committed the alleged acts, but she proves by preponderance of the evidence other facts which, under the law, either justify or excuse her otherwise wrongful actions. In this case, a victim of sex trafficking would offer into evidence the fact that she was coerced into the sex trafficking trade and did commit the crime of prostitution, but she did so due to the coercion by the trafficker. Formally, An affirmative defense can come into play at trial when the defense attorney offers into evidence this coercion of the trafficker on the defendant, and the judge and jury decide whether the defendant has proven the elements of the defense. Informally, evidence of sex trafficking would arise in the pretrial plea negotiation process between the prosecutor and the defense attorney. Here's a hypothetical scenario. The defense attorney approaches the prosecutor and states that the defendant was the victim of sex trafficking, citing to the evidence in the police record or to the statements of the defendant to that attorney. The prosecutor would then decide whether these statements appear to be true, and if so, they would use their discretion to dismiss the case. Because most prostitution charges are classified as misdemeanors and are largely seen as victimless crimes, a reasonable prosecutor would likely take this evidence into account in dismissing the case for lack of the intent element of the crime. An affirmative defense is a choice that is made based on the decision of the defendant and their attorney. A victim of sex trafficking that is charged with prostitution would not be forced or required to invoke this defense. It is merely a legal option, a lifeboat for a victim of sex trafficking that may be looking for a way out of the tragic cycle of trafficking and abuse. SB 21 would help avoid re-victimizing victims that have already suffered enough due to sex trafficking. SB 21 would give a voice to the many victims of sex trafficking that have been silenced by our current legal system. Unlike individuals that willingly engage in sex work, victims of sex trafficking often have no voice and no rights to make decisions that impact their basic daily survival. They also often have no choice as to whether they engage in prostitution at all, and instead are under the complete control of the person that is trafficking them. Everything from the food they eat to where they sleep to whom they come into contact with may be completely outside of their control. Today, even if a victim of sex trafficking were to confront their trafficker with threats of seeking help and reporting the abuse, the trafficker may say, "Well, what are you going to do? Go to the cops? They're just going to arrest you again." At the very least, SB 21 will offer an option of reprieve for the victim of sex trafficking to seek help from law enforcement or direct services providers without facing the threat of racking up another criminal conviction. To close, various advocates for the legislation of for the legalization of prostitution take issue with Alaska's current definitions of sex trafficking and the statutory scheme that governs this industry. While reasonable minds may differ on those tangential issues, none of that is directly addressed by SB 21. Our bill, which is nearly one sentence long, does not intend to amend the larger sex trafficking statutes or any other area of prostitution or solicitation crimes. It does not attempt to legalize prostitution. It does not give an out to those that willingly engage in sex work. SB 21 merely would add an optional affirmative defense for a victim that has been sex trafficked. Thank you again to this committee for hearing our bill. We are available for any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Well said. Well said. There are going to be some questions. And Senator, if you don't mind, we had Melissa Engel, who was on a time constraint issue. If you don't mind, I'll go ahead and give her the seat and then call you back up for questions. And then I'll explain, once she gives her testimony, who we have online, because we have quite a list of testifiers.
Thank you.
If you don't mind. Thank you. And then we'll have you two back up here as soon as, because I think we do have some questions from the committee at this point. But in order to give the best request we can to the time constraint, we have Melissa here.
Well, thank you for that consideration. And good afternoon. My name is Melissa Engel. I'm a Juneau resident and a youth pastor for five churches here in the community. And I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 21. Alaska women and children are forced into sex work every day, yet these victims are subject to arrest, prosecution, and potential conviction. Senate Bill 21 would require courts to accept an affirmative defense to the crime of prostitution, as we just heard, if a person can prove they were a victim of sex trafficking. It is a common sense public policy to chip away at the institutional barriers that force victims to stay silent. In 2013, Alaska's Task Force on Sex Trafficking heard from experts from across the state about the fear, embarrassment, and situational challenges victims face that prevent them from coming forward. Victims of sex trafficking are likely to live in poverty, have limited education, lack work opportunities, and be addicted to drugs and alcohol. These are victims, not criminals, who need help, compassion, and services. It is simply cruel to put people forced into sex work through a system that re-victimizes them when they try to speak out. This bill removes the fear of prosecution that prevents victims from seeking help or emergency services when they badly need it. As a clergy and a person of faith, I work with people in poverty, the ones who are there briefly, and then those who are stuck in the cycle of poverty, since it is so hard to get out of it, especially if you are criminalized. In this ministry, being with people in poverty is one of compassion, and compassion requires listening and being of service and of help. Women and children who are victims of sex trafficking deserve our compassion, and this, to me, is the ministry of Jesus. Jesus walked with and was in ministry with those in poverty, the criminalized, the marginalized, and the disenfranchised. And I testify because this matters to me, because I am called to walk in the steps of Jesus as a pastor and as a Christian. So I am here to say, let's have compassion for women and children, especially when they are victims of sex trafficking. Let's have our compassion for others be embodied in our policies and laws. Senate Bill 21 is working toward compassion, and now it's the job of the legislators to step up and reflect that. And this is just one baby step in fighting sex trafficking, but it's a crucial one. Please pass Senate Bill 21 to empower victims of sex trafficking to seek the help they so badly need. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Engel, and for your pastoral work and the testimony. We appreciate it. If I could have the senator and staff come back up. Thank you. And thank you for allowing that. And then one of the other things here, I have several professional testimony or testifiers, but just for questions, and this may be for you when you when we ask you questions, you have a lifeline. Hillary Martin's online, who's a drafter. We also have public defender, Anchorage Police Department. We have some other testifiers. And generally my view is to let the public testify before I get the professionals. But we'll see how it goes. But any questions from the committee for the sponsor at this point?
I
do. Yes, Senator, go ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, appreciate the opportunity to hear the bill in the committee. And when we look at what other states, how other states have addressed this problem, it seems that some of the states have focused solely on a minor. And I was just curious if you had any thoughts about, had you thought about addressing minors specifically and what happens to a minor? For example, in North Carolina, they're taking into temporary custody as an unsupervised juvenile, and I assume the rationale there would be to allow the young person to be to access other services.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'll invite my aide to respond, but first I just want to say that we already have statutes that protect children or that seek to protect children. How effective they are, I don't know. But when a child experiences certain things, the response from the state certainly is very different than if it's an adult. I think in a perfect world, if a person is arrested for prostitution and invokes the affirmative defense, we would have a series of services available to help a person. Job training, I know in Minnesota they're working on a really big outreach for prostitutes and for educating chambermaids, for example, when somebody's in a room never left alone and the maids know that there's a parade of people going in and out and that the woman is never alone there. To identify and help members of the public understand when there's a problem. So for kids, absolutely, I think that law enforcement responds much more promptly and takes it very seriously. I would hope so. Others may have experience where things are different, but in a perfect world, that's what would happen. So this bill addresses adults.
Do you want to? Through the chair, one thing that others...
Go ahead and put your name on the record again.
Katie Brueggemann, aide to Senator Gardner. Through the chair, it's my understanding that while affirmative defense is one legal option that certain legislatures have done, there are other mechanisms like the safe harbor law for
for minors, and it creates an immunity for minors that have been arrested for prostitution. So that's something that we could look at maybe in another session or something, but this is just specifically...
For the broader context, just to let you know, we do have Quinlan Steiner, who is public defender. We have the Anchorage Police, Lieutenant Nancy, Redner. And we might be able to get to them. We also have Hillary Martin on as alleged legal, but this is pretty narrowly crafted from what I can see. And so those kind of questions may broaden out. And if you want to ask Quinlan Steiner when it's his turn to testify, we might want to just check into that. Senator McChickie, you had a question?
This may take just a moment, Mr. Chair. There's a zero fiscal note on the bill, and I understand its intent and purpose, but I'm going to read you two pieces from the background information we have. One was from the ad hoc group. Talked about six cases involving a total of 105 victims, 20% of whom were Alaska Native, 40% of the total victims were minors. It talked about one case that estimated that Don Webster, a.k.a. Jerry Starr, made $3.6 million off of 13 of his 25 known victims. The agency considered the estimate conservative. And then it goes on, or I'll go on, with the Huffington Post article where, and this was originally a Parnell bill, I believe, last year. It's talking about that version of the bill, which is very similar. But it talked about a victim, and when she testified, she said that her pimp initially treated her well and told her she'd not want for anything, and then the relationship deteriorated to the point where she was beaten for being even a dollar short, hogtied and gagged and thrown into an underground tunnel for days. Here's my point. With a zero fiscal note, how can we actually expect those living under those conditions to come forward without the protection needed to ensure their safety after testifying? It's my only concern. I'm hugely supportive of your mission of the bill. I just want to make sure that we provide victims with the tools to truly have a way out of their situation and being willing to testify against people that aren't so nice.
Thank you. Through the chair, this is Senator Gardner. I think you raise a valid point, and we may hear more of it from the people who testify on this bill here. When we look at legislation, you know, the first question I ask is, are we addressing a real problem? Is it a real problem? Yes. I think we'll probably all agree it is a very real problem. Is this the best solution? I don't think any one of us can have the audacity to think our idea is necessarily the best. Is it a good one? Does it do anything good? I mean, these are the things I always ask myself. What are the unintended consequences? I think that in the real world, probably very few people will take advantage of this option, particularly if we don't put a lot of money into providing services. Now, in Minnesota, I know what they're working on is having job training. Part of the problem is people that, in the circumstances that you just described from the materials, might not have other job skills. Maybe they can't go home. They have nowhere else to go. The pimp or the abuser is also the person who houses and feeds and, you know, does other things for them. So it genuinely is a problem in our fiscal climate here. I wouldn't dream of proposing a really robust program of services at this time. We do have shelters. People may know about them, may not. I mean, that's something that a good defense attorney is going to make sure that her client knows. Do you have a safe place to go? What do you need? And to get them connected with organizations that are out in the community, most of them grant-funded and donation-funded, and not enough of them. This committee may well find a better option and be willing to propose it, and I'd probably be grateful if you have a better solution that we can get through. My objective is at least to put this out there so a victim can say, you know, I've had enough. I'm going to go to the police and get some help. Will it be used a lot? I don't know, but it's a start, and I hope would change a conversation if people know that it's here.
one follow-up.
Sure. Senator Michiki, follow-up.
Sort of along that line on the preventative side, I mean, bad folks are opportunists, right? And they're playing on the vulnerability of the innocent. And a lot of them are village young men and women that come into town, and they're a target. Is there anything that we're looking at as education for a preventative measure in rural areas that might help future victims recognize the danger when they leave the village or small community?
We have learned recently in working on another piece of legislation relating to child abuse that the Department of Education does not require that schools teach personal safety, but they actually have a regulation that strongly recommends that every district have offer personal safety classes for the students. I suppose this body can consider whether that should be a state requirement or simply a strong recommendation, but again, there are costs associated every time you tell a school what they have to do. There are obviously very strong costs for not doing the things that we know are right. And I think it's a very important conversation for all of us to have and to think about.
And Senator, we know that, like, for example, the ministry, you have, looks like, some non-governmental organizations who are backing this particular issue up. And I know in Alaska, there have been those who do whatever they can for restorative, you know, everything from workforce restoration to personal counseling. So we're all in this together. And so this is at least one tool for them to get a way out. And I think the bill speaks to that specifically. So, but there are going to be some issues, and I'll bring them up probably when we get down to the affirmative defense part. With regard to law, and for example, if you use it once, that's fine. If you use it twice, how does it go? And, you know, we're going to be asking those kind of questions as we go down this road, too. So I have a whole group of people lined up to testify. I've got about 40 minutes left. If there's no other questions, I'd like to get to the testimony. If that's okay, Senator Michiki, you have another question?
I have more questions, but I agree. I'd rather get through some of the testimony, and perhaps there'll be some time at the end.
Yeah, we have both professional and individual testifiers, and it's hard for me to decipher who's who. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start from the top of the list to work my way down. But if it's professional testimony that can testify later on this, because this will not be the last time we'll hear it in committee, you know, we'll get to it. But we do have a couple of people from out of state who are way late in their day that I'd like to get to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate your courtesy for the people who are professionals and probably have huge caseloads. If you'd like, Katie could probably identify on your list of people who are waiting to speak which ones are professionals that we know of.
Well, there's one in Fairbanks I'm going to get to who's been waiting a long time, but I have some in Providence, Rhode Island, and some in San Francisco. One is the chapter called Coyote and Community for United, and the other one is Community United for Safety and Protection. They're kind of late on my list, but they're also very far away from where we're at. Would it be wise to have them call in later and let the individuals, because I have a lot of individuals just testifying. It says self, self, self. And I'd be, if somebody took off their work to come testify before Bill, I want to make sure they get to testify.
Mr. Chair, we have a list of professional people that include Nancy Reeder from the Vice Squad at APD, Nicole Merriweather, who's with the Fairbanks Youth Advocates, Mandy O'Neill Cole, who's with AWARE here in Juneau. She may be in the audience.
Yep, she's here.
And Josh Lowers. From Covenant House in Anchorage, and those are the four that also Hillary Martin is, he knows about that online for questions. So those are the four that we were expecting, and if they're online, they probably would appreciate getting through quickly, and after that, we have no preference.
Well, I'm going to take the one from Tara Burns in Fairbanks, and then I'm going to go ask the two from Providence, Rhode Island, and San Francisco if they want to put testimony online today, and then I'm going to go through the less than professional testimony as I see it. When they say that for themselves, I'm going to try to give them the first shot.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Tara Burns is here in the room.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Tara. That's nice to know. Thank you. I appreciate that. Because in 40 minutes, I'd like to get the individual testifiers as much as possible. And then, because I have a feeling we're going to hear this issue, we're going to have to look at some of the legal questions as we did previously. So I'm going to go to Bella Robinson, who's in Providence, Rhode Island at this point. Was there testimony?
Hello? Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well. Do you want to give your testimony now, or do you want to wait for another time?
I can go right. Do you want me to wait, or I can go right now if you want?
Go ahead.
And I'll be pretty brief, too.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Bella.
Okay. My name is Bella, and I'm in Rhode Island. And when I was a teenager, I was a victim of trafficking. By federal definition, of course, back then it was perfectly legal. I'd been married off to a 41-year-old man at age 17. But I wanted to let you know that Rhode Island is one of the few states that decriminalized indoor sex work for 30 years. In 2009, they did criminalize prostitution in the state. But when we did our trafficking legislation, they did add something very important. Rhode Island does not require anyone to prove that they are a victim. And I think it's kind of insulting to say victims need to prove this. Do we make rape victims prove that they were raped? And it will also stop a lot of people from coming forward. But I think that we can do much, much better with trafficking legislation. I think we can all agree that it's already illegal to force a minor into prostitution, to kidnap people, and to do all these things. And every year I see a new batch of laws getting passed, and you know what? None of it stops trafficking. And it was really happy to hear people talk about services and job training and things like that. Right now we have 2.5 million homeless kids in America. We gave the trafficking NGOs $686 million last year. There are no services other than public shelters. There are no jobs that pay a living wage. There is no long-term housing. There is no college education without debt. And this is how we're failing our youth. If we're going to reduce trafficking, we need to stop trying to abolish prostitution and have a list of who's the bad women and who's the victim and worth services. And that's all I'm going to say, and I really appreciate you listening to my two cents. Thank you.
Thank you, Bella. And I know you're on a different part of the clock than we are, so I wanted to make sure that you had a chance to have your say, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go to Maxine Dugan, who's in San Francisco, Community United for Safety and Protection. Maxine, can you hear us?
Yes, thanks so much, Senator Congill, for taking my call. I've been waiting a long time. I am with Community United for Safety and Protection. We are an Alaska group for sex workers, our allies, sex trafficking victims, and we oppose SB 21. And we opposed this version of this bill last year when it was SB 171. And the reasons we opposed it last year are the same reason that we're going to oppose it this year, which is that it puts victims in the situation of having to prove something when they are in the middle of trying to defend themselves in a criminal case. If we have a victim, then we need law enforcement, both the police and prosecutors, to recognize that and to not recommend charges of prostitution and to not bring charges of prostitution against a victim. And that seems to be where the problem is. And maybe the judiciary could look at that instead, because SB 21 doesn't provide any means for, you know, victims to be able to make sure that they have a really good defense. I mean, we saw this already in Alaska where we had the Kiana Marshall case where she was a victim, but yet we saw how the police and the prosecutors did not view her as such. So that's where the problem is. And so to set a victim up in a situation where they're being charged by the very people who are supposed to protect them and prove to them, when they've already had, you know, the opportunity to prove to them in an investigation that they're a victim, then, you know, then that system has already failed. So we should not, and as, you know, the sponsor has already said, very few people are going to take advantage of this type of law. And we're spending way too much time on the wrong set of laws. Thank you for taking my testimony in opposing SB 21 today.
Thank you, Maxine. I would encourage you to stay in touch with the sponsor. There may be other ways that she can address some of those. But anyway, I really appreciate your time. Then I'm going to go to the top of the list. Once again, Tara, do you want to go ahead and take your time at this point? Why don't we do that? You were the first one to sign up, so I just wanted to respect those who are on a very different time of the day than we were.
Yeah.
And then we have some that signed up for by themselves, and I will try to get to them along the way here. Oh, I'm sorry, and I've got one in Philadelphia. Ooh, I missed that. My apologies, but you're here, Tara?
I'm here. And I'm Tara Burns. I'm a graduate student at UAF. I've been studying the human rights impacts of Alaska's sex trafficking and prostitution laws for the last year and a half or so. I also was a sex trafficking victim as a minor here in Alaska, and have done sex work in Alaska as well. Conditions in the sex trade in Alaska have been very, very much affected by policy. You may be familiar with a case in Nenana many years ago where a woman who was involved in the sex trade shot and killed a client who had attacked her. And at that time, she was found not guilty. It was found to be self-defense. And as the laws changed, we saw, you know, that would not have happened again years later. When Senator Gardner's intern, Steve, called me last year about this bill, he told me that it was created because of a press conference that we had held after a public records request I made in 2013, which Senator Gardner had read about in the dispatch. At that time, every alleged victim of sex trafficking under the 2012 sex trafficking laws, which are state laws here in Alaska, had been convicted of prostitution. But this bill would not have protected any of those victims. There were, and I do appreciate that Senator Gardner changed the language from forced to induced, but those people were neither forced nor induced into prostitution, so the bill would not have protected them. Last year when Senator Gardner introduced the bill, she said that she had written it after hearing about Kiana Marshall, who Maxine mentioned. She was a victim of horrific sex trafficking here in Alaska, and she was charged at the federal level with dozens of counts of conspiracy to traffic. And the charging documents say that what she gained from that conspiracy was the use of the space to perform commercial sex acts, which they alleged that she was trafficked into. This bill would not have helped her, as she was not charged with prostitution at the Alaska state level. In fact, most of the people who are charged with prostitution in Alaska are charged under Anchorage municipal law. If you look at the Uniform Crime Report going back a few years, which is available, you have individual police department reporting through the Legislative Information Office. You'll see that there's, you know, between like 0 to 4 prostitution charges at the state level every year. For my research, I surveyed 40 people with experience in Alaska's sex trade. About a third of them meet the federal definition of a sex trafficking victim. When those victims tried to report to the police that they had been the victim or witness of a crime, 80% of them were turned away. Two-thirds were threatened with arrest, and about one-fifth were actually arrested when they were trying to report a crime. This bill would not protect any of those people or make the police take their report. These are very serious human rights violations that they affect very real people here in Alaska. And as legislators, you have the ability to create laws that would improve this situation. I don't believe this law would do that. In July, I was trying to report a situation that could legally be defined as sex trafficking under Alaska state law to Sergeant Bruce with the Alaska Bureau of Investigations. Sergeant Bruce agreed that the perpetrator, who claimed to be a police officer, seemed to have committed the crime of sex trafficking, but he still said that the report was classified as an unreported report or an unreportable report unless the victim submitted herself to potential arrest. He went on to explain that he believes Alaska's sex prostitution laws actually cause sex trafficking because people know that prostitutes risk arrest if they try to report a crime and target them for sex trafficking. I don't have to tell you that Alaska is called the rape capital of the country. Many social theorists believe that crimes like sex trafficking and rape occur when we as a society mark a certain type of woman as rapeable or sex trafficable. And we do so with laws like this. This bill divides sex trafficking victims into two groups, those who were induced and deserve to be able to access this protection, and those who were not induced and risk prosecution if they come forward and attempt to report being a victim of sex trafficking. In doing so, I believe that it will increase the victimization of people in the latter group of sex trafficking victims. Respectfully, I would like to suggest that instead of introducing a new narrow definition of sex trafficking, that the law uses the federal definition, which includes all minors in the sex trade, and the use of force, fraud, or coercion in the recruitment, harboring, procurement, transportation of a person for the purpose of a commercial sex act. I read Senator Gardner's opinion piece in the Pipeline blog, which it says victims should not be required to testify. It says that that's what this law would do. I would like this law to actually do that and not require victims to come forward and offer evidence, prove that they have been victims of sex trafficking. It's a legal and psychological burden that will prove to be too much of a barrier for many victims. Like Senator Gardner said, these people should not have to testify, much less prove that they were forced into prostitution. A misdemeanor conviction is not a big deal for many people. By the time they have the chance to access this remedy, they will have already suffered the public shaming via the news and court view that is the main consequence of a prostitution charge anyways. Victims of sex trafficking in Alaska need protection, not just a remedy that is, you know, very small that comes at the end of this process. The kind of dual definition that we have now of these people, they are offenders and they are victims, has led to a lot of police harassment. In just one of the state sex trafficking cases that I know of, in Anchorage, the police harassed the victims so much that two of them moved out of state and one made a suicide attempt. So, you know, people need to be protected from arrest and from being charged and not just have this option of an affirmative defense. In this piece, Senator Gardner says sex trafficking victims shouldn't be prosecuted. And, you know, I agree. I think that if Senate Bill 21 became a bill that did not allow sex trafficking victims to be charged and did not force them to testify and prove that they had been victims of sex trafficking, as it's represented in this opinion piece that it does, this bill would actually save the state money instead of costing money through these, you know, hearings or trials where people would have to prove that they were a victim, whereas right now most prostitution charges just plea out to a diversion program. But anyways, this bill has the potential to restore many sex trafficking victims the ability to come forward and report that they've been a victim of a crime and access equal protection under the law. But it also has the potential to increase sex trafficking of those who are excluded from protection under this bill, who I believe are the majority of sex trafficking victims in Alaska. I hope you'll consider these factors as you decide what the right thing is.
Thank you, Dara. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions?
No, thank
you. Well, you know, since you've done some research, just one of the questions that will come to my mind, and I'll try to keep that line of questioning as we go down through here, is that prostitution under, say, an independent operator would be illegal in a state.
Right.
And so we're trying to create a situation where caught in an illegal activity, they have an affirmative defense defend themselves is what we're trying to do. And you still see that as a trap?
I think that the affirmative defense is not a workable solution for victims of sex trafficking, that they should not be arrested in the first place, that they should not be, even if they are not arrested, they should not be put in this situation where, you know, they are coerced into becoming informants and into doing things that they are not comfortable with under threat of arrest and prosecution.
Okay, so you see, once they're caught, then they could be used by both the police as to almost re-victimize themselves in order to be an informant.
Right, and it's very traumatic for some of these people. You know, people have had to move out of the state to get away from the police. And, you know, one person swallowed a handful of pills and jumped off the top of the travel lodge after being harassed by police because she was a victim, or because they believed she was a victim of sex trafficking.
Yeah. Well, I sure appreciate your testimony. Senator Michiki, you had a question as well?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it almost seems like there's two issues. There's the issue of someone who's being charged with prostitution because they've been more or less caught in the act. And I believe you're also looking for a way for a victim to come forward that hasn't been charged. So
that was what Senator Bardner said that the purpose of the bill was, wasn't it?
Not entirely, no.
Well, I do remember her saying that she believes that people should be able to come forward and report that they had been a victim of sex trafficking without being arrested, and I think that would be the...
Well, we'll let the senator clear that
yes.
one up.
Sure.
Thank you, Tara. I appreciate you coming before the committee, and very compelling. So at this point, I'm just going to start going down the list. We have Mandy Cole, who's here in Juneau with the AWARE, and Gwen Adams will be right after that in Anchorage with Priceless. So, Mandy, are you online? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Mandy Cole, and I'm the Deputy Director for AWARE. We're a Victim Services, Domestic Violence Sexual Assault Victim Service Agency here in Juneau. And I wanted to testify today just briefly in support of this bill. Sex trafficking has always been difficult for us to identify. I remember working with a young woman many years ago who told me she'd been brought to the U.S. to get married, but the man she was supposed to marry ended up, quote, giving her to his friend. At the time, I was a pretty new advocate, and I didn't ask enough questions. But looking back, I believe she was just entering the sex trafficking cycle. So this wasn't about one or two bad men, but about an organized effort to exploit women for sex. I think about what it would be like if I met up with her now and had to know and got to know what she had to do to survive. I think it's hard for many of us to understand the powerlessness of victims who are trafficked. And the trafficking system is built overtly on the hopelessness of a victim's situation. Many of the women and children who are trafficked come from difficult and dangerous circumstances. They start at a disadvantage and don't know how to get help. They are sometimes runaways, child victims, women from other countries who don't know how our systems work and, moreover, don't trust our systems, and usually for good reasons. The victims are often bribed, drugged, coerced, and threatened into performing sex work. They're given few options, and they learn to survive. They're taught to fear law enforcement and the courts. They are sometimes brainwashed to identify and protect their criminal traffickers. We who are privileged not to be trafficked must use our power to reduce the barriers for victims and to combat that brainwashing. It's our job to hold the perpetrators accountable and to be thoughtful about who the perpetrators really are. Traffickers, whether they're individuals or networks, use fear and hopelessness to build a business and profit from the suffering of others. I would like to make it harder for them to do so, and I do believe that this bill is a step in the right direction. It may not address all of the circumstances and situations that victims find themselves in, but it can be a defense for some of those who are in a particular and unique situation. So I urge you to support SB 21. Thank you.
Thank you, Mandy. I really appreciate you taking time and being concise with us. And my apologies to Melanie Dante. I noticed that you were in Philadelphia. And Melanie, are you representing yourself, an organization? And if it's yourself, do you want to give us your testimony this time?
Yes, I'm calling on behalf of myself. Let me first say thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to do this. I am calling from Philadelphia. My testimony opposes the current wording of SB 21. For background on me, my name is Melanie. In 2003, I completed a BA senior study on the topic of prostitution and trafficking at Goddard College in Plainfield, Vermont. Tara Burns has utilized aspects of both my life experience and my 2003 research in her current studies at UAF. Like Tara and Della in Rhode Island, I am also a former homeless teenager as a result of child abuse, and am now defined by federal law as a domestic minor sex trafficking victim. Over 20 years ago, as an adult worker, I attempted communicating trafficking crimes to federal law enforcement. My experience is that it is not particularly safe, effective, or beneficial to communicate with federal or municipal law enforcement, and that also shelter services rarely bridge the divide between homelessness and active community member. I oppose the current wording of the bill because I believe that potential or alleged sex trafficking victims should be able to come forward and report a crime without being arrested for a myriad of other crimes that just confuse the situation for them in their coming forth. There should be protection for individuals who are reporting sex trafficking or prostitution, be they workers or clients or people who are observing a situation. Earlier, a gentleman, I believe his name was Bill, made some beautifully valid points about victims not having the tools to help themselves. And that's really something that people need to take into consideration because you don't have to be from another country to be completely lost in the system once you have been the victim of a crime, especially when you are at a socioeconomic disadvantage. The bill, as it is right now, does not remedy the long-term consequences and cost of a prostitution arrest and trial. Also, with the current confusion between prostitution, sex work, and sex trafficking, finding businesses or individuals who will hire known prostitutes attempting to get out of the business or will hire victims of sex trafficking after everything is said and done, along with finding affordable, safe housing options such as non-denominational collective living units, it's not even part of the discussion. What happens to people after they come forth is essential, and the lack of options is what keeps the cycle active. Thank you, Senators, and thank you, Council, for allowing for me to testify.
Thank you very much and taking the time to come before our committee and hanging on to the phone as long as you did. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate your patience also. Thank you.
Yeah. We have several that are part of state and local agencies that I'm going to skip over for those who put down their testifying for themselves. And if it sounds like they are part of the organization, I will probably try to push them along. We have 15 minutes. And so I'm just going to tell Quinlan Steiner, Nancy Riedner, Nicole Merriweather that I will do what I can to get back to you, but those that have signed up individually, I'm going to try to get them first. So we have Joshua Spring in Anchorage. Joshua, are you there?
Hello. My name is Joshua Spring. I am a certified paralegal who for the past year has been working or volunteering in immigration law, which has included refugee and asylum cases. The first time I encountered a victim of human sex trafficking, I discovered that this victim had been initially sold at the age of 9. What followed was probably the worst series of events that I have ever heard in my life. Though those events are now decades old, the victim still exhibits physical signs of emotional trauma. Surviving human trafficking is difficult enough as it is without having the law administer a second layer of shame with legal repercussions for prostitution. I believe this bill can help ease the burden that these individuals face. That is why I am fully in favor of Senate Bill 21. Thank you for your time.
Joshua, thank you for being concise. And you can see we have some pros and cons on this, and so keep focused. Any questions for Joshua? Thank you for your work, Joshua. I'm going to go to Kendra Higgins in Anchorage.
Hi. excuse me. Thank you for giving me the time to testify today. My name is Kendra Higgins, and I'm a physical therapist living in Fairview in Anchorage off of 13th and Hyder. I come from a racially and socioeconomically privileged background that few who live in my part of Fairview are part of. Every day I see at least 3 and up to 15 sex workers working on my street in the 2 blocks on either side, even in the middle of winter. Sometimes they're alone, but often they're with men who are clearly directing them, and most of them appear to be struggling with substance abuse or mental illness. This is something that many of my equally privileged peers in Anchorage don't see because they don't often go to Fairview. But it's there and has created a climate that makes me afraid for the fates of the women working there. It is a very real issue in Anchorage. It does exist, and these people deserve protection and a voice without being fearful of arrest or persecution. Thanks.
Kendra, thank you very much being concise and to the point and staying with us on this. I'm going to go to Tara Devlin at this point. Tara?
Hi, my name is Tara Devlin. I'm a preschool teacher in Anchorage. I spend most of my time in Spinard or Fairview. And before that, I didn't know that sex trafficking was real in Anchorage. I thought it was a really foreign thing. I lived in Mexico, and that's where all I heard about it. But then living in Fairview and talking to my neighbors, one in particular told me her story. And when she was 17, she was alone. She was in an abusive family, so she had to leave her family. And she was with a boyfriend who, well, she thought he was his boyfriend, but she would have to do sexual acts for him, and he would get thousands of dollars every time, and she would be beat. And she was addicted to crack cocaine. He would get her, he'd make her do it. And what she told me is now she's around 40 years old, and she said, I just want to advocate for young women to not get in with boyfriends that they think are, that they're going to give them everything because these men want to take advantage of them, and I wish I could just do that for them because no one did it for me. And so on behalf of my neighbor, I would like to say that I support this bill to protect our young women in Alaska.
Tara, thanks for taking the time out to testify. Really appreciate it. That those are the kind of things as we're thinking through this bill that we'll keep focused on. So thank you very much. Any questions at this point? Thank you very much for taking time out of your life to testify. Robin Smith also said to testify for himself. So, Robin?
Hello?
Yeah, Robin, you're up. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. I'm sorry. I heard a noise and I wasn't sure what the deal was. Well, I really appreciate having the opportunity to testify today. Human trafficking is a form of modern-day slavery, and it remains one of the most brutal and widespread human rights violations in the world. In the United States, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children estimates that at least 100,000 juveniles are sexually trafficked each year, most often by local traffickers, more commonly referred to as pimps. Sadly, the majority of women enter prostitution before they have reached the age of consent. Research shows that most women in prostitution were sexually and physically abused as children, suffered myriad deprivations, and were pushed into the flesh trade at a very young age. In the United States, the average age of entry into prostitution is 12 to 14 years old. These girls enter after having endured incest abuse and rape by family members or acquaintances, and it accommodates them to violence and exploitation until eventually they believe this is their role in life. I can give you some of the percentages. In one study, 90% of the women had been physically battered in childhood. 74 were sexually abused in their families, and 50% had all reported also having been sexually abused by someone outside of the family. I have more numbers, but I won't go into it. It's very, very bad. Once women are prostituted, it's difficult to get out. Because of their trauma at an early age, many of these women suffer from addiction, which has been perpetuated by their pimps as a way to keep them in line. Another part of this is because prostitutes are battered women. Many professionals who have contact with these kind of women many professionals who have contact with women in prostitution recognize their inability to leave their situation. In one study, 76% of law enforcement officials and 71% of social services providers interviewed said that they knew that some women in prostitution are held captive and are not free to leave. In essence, they're slaves. SB 21 may not be the perfect solution, but I think it's a step in the right direction. It recognizes that most of these women are victims. And this is really positive. So I would urge you to pass this bill in order to help them. I also urge you to look at the other bill that's going on, the other bill that's moving through the legislature, which is Aaron's Law, because the more that I read about why women enter into prostitution, the more I understand that we're not taking care of childhood sexual and physical and emotional abuse. And until we address those issues, we're not going to have an impact on the rates of prostitution today, because these women are victims. They're emotionally fragile. So please, please, pass SB 21 out of committee and pass it into a law. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robin. I really appreciate it. We're running tight on time, and so here's what I would like to do. I'd like to get Nicole Merriweather up, and I'm just going to ask Gwen Adams, are you available to come up at the next meeting, Gwen?
When is the next meeting?
My guess is she'll have this up. Honestly, I can't tell you. I can't speak for the chairman. I'm the spare tire chairman today, but is this something that you'll follow as you go through the this bill?
Yes, I will.
Because I have one in Fairbanks, and I'd like to get Lieutenant Nancy Ridner, the Anchorage Police, to have kind of the last say. So, Gwen, if you don't mind, that takes you and Quinlan Steiner to come back at another time when this bill is up for hearing. And I'm only doing that because I'm out of time, but I wanted the Lieutenant to give us a little bit of time. And so, Nicole Merriweather, you're in Fairbanks. At this point, can you give us your testimonies but to the point in brief?
Yes, it is. My name is Nicole Merriweather, and we just so we work with homeless youth, mostly younger than 18, but when we encounter the 18-year-olds, sex trafficking is really hard to prove and hard to get them out of if they don't have a way out, and so we're in support of the bill and think that it'll be a helpful way out for the younger people that are involved in sex trafficking to have a way out.
Thank you, Nicole. That was brief and to the point, and I appreciate that. That gives Gwen, did you sign off yet?
No, I'm still here.
Why don't you go ahead and give us a couple of minutes testimony that will let me get to Lieutenant Nancy Ridner of the Anchorage Police Department.
Okay, my name is Gwen Adams, and I lead a nonprofit organization called Priceless that exists to come alongside sex trafficking victims in the state of Alaska. And I also was on Governor Parnell's task force against the crimes of human trafficking. I want to start by saying there's been some tremendous work and ground gained in combating these crimes through the last administration and the current one also, so thank you all. I oppose Senate Bill 21, which is and these are my reasons. This would undo the progress that we have made in the state to go after those who are sex trafficking by recruiting and harboring and coercing people into sex acts. A lot has been said about the victims, but the best way to help victims is to go after the perpetrators of these crimes. The only way that we can effectively do that is the testimony of these victims. By giving the victims a chance to not have to engage in this process and be held accountable for the crime of prostitution, we remove them away from law enforcement, tie law enforcement's hands so they can't actually ask them to testify. The only access law enforcement has to these victims is through the initial arrest for the crime of prostitution. Our law enforcement, as we've seen over the recent history, we now have 14 victims that we're working with, and only one case has been actually been given a, been arrested for the crime of prostitution, and that was because of her refusing to work or talk with law enforcement. So law enforcement has been very, very understanding of this crime, and we have a very close working relationship with them, and we have been able to put several sex traffickers behind bars because of the testimony of these very brave victimized women who, through their testimony, are offered unlimited amounts of help as we've been able to walk with them. If we lessen the crime of prostitution in any way, making it harder to be arrested and charged by simply claiming that you're a victim, then this is a perfect tool for traffickers to use to keep their gals from being pulled out. The very nature of sex trafficking means that you're entrapped and enslaved. The coercion aspect of sex trafficking means victims say what they are told to say to remain as money-making entities for sex traffickers. This law will be used by pimps, make no mistake. I believe it is the sole focus of this bill to enable those in the sex industry, pimps and prostitutes, to live in the shadows and never be held responsible for their crimes. This bill is disguised to protect victims. It does not do that in any way. It actually further victimizes them by keeping law enforcement away from their pimps. Thank you so much for letting me testify.
Gwen, thank you for holding in there. And those are the things that we need to hear as we consider these things. So we'll look for our ways to navigate. Any questions for at this point, Senator Machicki?
I have a question for Ms. Merriweather. I'm not sure I completely agree with your logic, and here's the way I would phrase it. Without this, the victim essentially pays the ticket and has, even if they're a victim of sex trafficking, has less of an avenue and less motivation to turn in the sex trafficker. This allows them to use an affirmative defense and encourages them to use that defense. The defense is only functional if it's in relation to the defendant engaged in conduct, which is actually sex trafficking. So wouldn't you say that this encourages a prostitute that may be a victim of sex trafficking to testify against their master,
well,
if you will, in this case, almost?
Well, from experience with the 14 victims that we are now working with, all of which have aspects of sex trafficking, it is, victims don't even recognize that they're being trafficked. So in order for us to gain access to them, get them into some counseling, even to see the level of coercion and how they're being treated, it requires space away from their pimp. If we can't arrest them and begin to even have a space to ask those questions, they don't even recognize themselves as victims until there's been some space. So I think that's where it meets the rub for me.
So, Gwen, I'm down to my last 30 seconds in the committee meeting, so I'm just going to have the sponsor stay in touch with you.
Thank you.
You can have the last say, and what I'm just going to say to Quinlan and to Lieutenant Nancy Reedner, that we'll just have to get in touch with you for the remaining testimony on this. But you're the only two I didn't get to. But I did want to give the sponsor a chance to come forward for the last minute and a half or 2 minutes make her case on some of the testimony that she's heard.
Thank you very much. I just want to clear up a couple of things so the committee
put
doesn't
your name
go
on.
Away with some misunderstanding. I'm Senator Berta Gardner. Clearly, it's a dark world, not a lot of fun for some people. But what we're trying to do is take a baby step today, and we're considering a host of other possibilities of what to do next. And we understand this won't impact a lot of people. But the bottom line is, well, actually, let me just pack up one second. I just want to say I appreciate Tara Burns. I spent a lot of time with her. She's my teacher. She says, you know, you guys go down there and you make bills, laws about all kinds of things you don't know anything about. And it's true. I know very little about this business.
and she has a lot to teach me, and I appreciate her efforts. But first of all, I mean, to respond to the most recent testifier, the prostitutes are arrested. They do have, and they do testify in their own defense. They can't be coerced by the state into facing their pimps in court and participating in the prosecution of the pimps. They can't be coerced into that. If they're in a safe place, they may be willing to, but that's not our focus here. They, in defending themselves and providing enough information to make sure they're not prosecuted, they're giving information to law enforcement that law enforcement can certainly use, but they can't be forced, the women can't be forced to face.
My suggestion to the next person who chairs this committee, which would be the Chairman McGuire, that the law enforcement be the first one up and then the public defender be the next one, because now we have wandered right into the real question is how is that actually practically played out in the law enforcement world. So for those, my apologies, we're actually out of our time, and I will I'm just going to have to ask you to hold that question. So
it's really important, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Take 10 seconds. I use the term master not as actual standing, but in recognition that in a true trafficking situation, there is unfortunately a slave-master relationship, and I think it's important
the dominance.
I didn't want it misunderstood.
That's the heart of the matter.
Yeah, it really is. And so I left Quinlan Steiner and Lieutenant Ridner on holding, but they heard where we ended up in the question, so my expectation is that we'll pick it up the next time we see this bill in front of us.
Terrific. Thank you.
With that, this committee is adjourned.